Next case is Carl Hayden v. Department of the Air Force, 2015-30073. Mr. Smith, we're ready when you are.
May it please the court. Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Stephen Smith, and I represent Carl Hayden in this case. This case involves the Air Force discriminating against one of their own for his service in the Air Force. Today, Mr. Hayden asks that you consider three distinct claims. If you find for him on any of which, we would ask that the case be remanded to the Merit Systems Protection Board for a calculation of back pay, interest, and associated retirement benefits. The first claim is discrimination. The MSPB erred in failing to apply the proper burden-shifting spectrum and regime outlined by this court in Sheehan, when, although it found that his reserve service was a motivating factor in the Air Force's cancellation of his promotion upgrade.
But the board found that there were other reasons. There were other reasons rather than his military service.
Yes, the MSPB accredited two justifications of the Air Force, Your Honor. The first being that he was required to complete a desk audit. However, that desk audit was not required, as both the MSPB found and the Air Force concede. Moreover, the desk audit could...
Wasn't there evidence, though, that for a move from GS-11 to GS-12, a desk audit would be preferred?
Although it may have been preferred, Your Honor, it was certainly not required. The imposition of the in-person desk audit of Mr. Hayden continued to discriminate against him based on his absence for military service, and the requirement, to the extent it is considered a requirement, could have been completed by interviewing his supervisor, Ms. Chambers.
I'm trying to figure out exactly what your position is. Is your position that they should have done away with the desk audit, that they should have accommodated him by having the desk audit be of his supervisor or by phone, or are you saying he was entitled to, should have been entitled to a desk audit the minute he came back?
Your Honor, I would first argue that the desk audit was not a legitimate reason to cancel Mr. Hayden's promotion request. My second, to the extent that this answers your question, I believe that the promotion process could have been completed and should have been completed in his absence, whether that means that they did not impose the desk audit or had been completed with his supervisor.
But wasn't the desk audit an established practice?
I believe the record evidence shows precisely the contrary, Your Honor. The supervisor of Mr. Hayden testified that she had never had to complete a desk audit or an in-person desk audit when recommending individuals for promotion.
But didn't the person who performed the desk audit say that for a GS-11 to a GS-12 move, that was the practice?
That was her preference, yes, Your Honor. Again, that further, the imposition of the requirement continued to discriminate against Mr. Hayden due to his absence. As this court has recognized, absence is the most predictable consequence of reserve service. The fact that the desk audit could have been completed despite Mr. Hayden's absence, but they held him to the additional standard that he complete this in person, continued to require that he be present.
So if we agree with you on that, what's left?
Further, the Air Force would point to the presence of surplus GS-12 and other GS-11 employees to justify their discrimination.
Did the Air Force, I mean, did the board point to that in the in connection with the discrimination claim, or did they only point to that in connection with the other claims?
Your Honor, unfortunately, the MSPB's analysis is far from clear in setting out the evidence they consider for every individual claim. I would argue that they did, in fact, find that there was a surplus employee that would have been was relevant to the discrimination analysis.
What happened to that employee?
Ultimately, that employee was, at the time of the appeal, I am not aware of that. What that employee is.
Okay, so you don't know whether that employee ever became a 12 again or not.
One of the surplus employees did, in fact, become a 12.
But that's not the one you would have had to compete against.
Correct, though, Your Honor, I would like to say that I do not believe competition was necessary. I believe that the MSPB erred in failing to consider Air Force Manual Rule 19, which the Air Force concedes as relevant, includes in its brief, though it does not devote any analysis to that rule. Under that rule, Mr. Hayden, because he was already performing the performing GS-12 duties, could have been promoted without competition.
All right, but even if there was, when you say could have been promoted without competition, even if there was competition, there's three different claims here. Some where Mr. Hayden has a different type of burden of proof and would have to prove that he would have been gotten the position regardless, and it's his burden, versus the discrimination claim. What would the government's burden be? Is the government's burden simply to establish that he would have been subject to competition, or would the government have to establish that he would have failed in that competition?
The latter, Your Honor. The government would have to establish that he would not have been promoted for legitimate reasons standing alone. That means without reference to his absence. And also, he would have to show that he would not have, in fact, won the competition. The cancellation occurred before the competition was ever employed. So I would argue that the competition could not have justified the cancellation.
Was the surplus employee surplused before this proposal to move him up to a 12?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so that employee was floating around at the relevant time frame.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, what about the issue of how long such a process normally takes? It seems to be nothing in the record that would establish for us how long a promotion like this, assuming the dust got it went forward with the supervisor, how long would it have taken?
I would argue that the record evidence demonstrates that the supervisor herself believed that the promotion would have been processed had Mr. Hayden not been absent.
How quickly?
To be honest, Your Honor, I do not believe that there is evidence suggesting a precise duration of time for how long it would have been processed. The only evidence is that Mr. Hayden's supervisor, Ms. Chambers, believed that the promotion would have been completed had he not been absent from military service.
There were obviously some changes in needs. They said they didn't need a 12 at the time that Mr. Hayden came back, but then Mr. Hayden gets promoted to a 12 anyway. Is there any evidence in the record with respect to when the drop in needs first occurred and when the return of the needs occurred?
The drop in needs occurred after the promotion had been canceled, Your Honor. Further, if the promotion had been timely processed, had it not been canceled due to Mr. Hayden's absence due to military service, I would submit that the needs of the protocol office would not have changed. So therefore, the Air Force is attempting to justify its discrimination via the very results of that discrimination, which is both circular and confounds common sense.
When he was promoted to a 12, when he was moved up to a 12, was he subject to competition at that point?
To my knowledge, no, Your Honor. Turning now to the reemployment claim, which does not take into account the Air Force's motivation, the Merit Systems Protection Board erred when it found that consideration for the promotion was not a generally granted benefit available to all employees. The Air Force manual specifically contemplates the availability of positions to be upgraded and governs and provides regulations applicable to each civilian employee of the Air Force in such circumstances. Here, the Air Force did not follow those that, as the manual set out, it did not consider him in absentia and merely canceled his request. The MSPB also erred in finding that the promotion was not reasonably certain in Mr. Hayden's circumstances. At the outset, to the extent the MSPB is suggesting that a discretionary promotion is per se not reasonably certain, that line of inquiry and line of reasoning has been explicitly rejected by the MSPB in Rasenfloss, which explicitly overruled all cases suggesting that. Further, the presence of other employees is not part of the standard, the applicable standard that should be suggested. So to the extent that the surplus employees were considered in terms of the reasonable certainty of Mr. Hayden's promotion upgrade, that was legal error. Under the proper standard, which only should be evaluating Mr. Hayden's outstanding performance reviews, his history of merit increases, as shown by his increase from GS-9 to GS-11, and the pay history of employees in other similar positions, many of which had and were eventually upgraded from GS-11 to GS-12 as protocol specialists, the only record evidence suggests that applying those factors, that the promotion was reasonably certain. I would further argue that, as mentioned before, Ms. Chambers believed that the promotion was reasonably certain absent his military service.
What is the standard of review that we would apply to the board's determination here?
For which claim, Your Honor?
For this one that you're discussing, the reemployment rights.
I would argue that it is a matter of law that should be reviewed de novo. It is an interpretation of the relevant CFR, which codifies the standard for which one determines reasonable certainty in a reemployment claim.
So in looking at the facts here and applying the standard of reasonable certainty, that would be a question of law?
No, Your Honor. I believe that the Merit Systems Protection Board erred in considering the presence of other GS-12 and GS-11 personnel that is not part of the proper standard. So therefore, that would be the legal error. Applying the correct standard, I believe that you, in looking at the evidence, it was the only reasonable interpretation is that the promotion was reasonably certain. Moving finally to Mr. Hayden's retaliation claim, the MSPB correctly noted that the standard is the same as that employed in its discrimination analysis. You will recall that the Air Force did, in fact, find record evidence showing that Mr. Hayden's military service was a motivating factor for the Air Force's adverse employment action. However, applying that same standard, they found that Mr. Hayden had somehow not provided evidence of discriminatory animus. This is the very discriminatory animus that they cited as shifting what should have shifted the burden in Mr. Hayden's discrimination claim. Further, they made an explicit...
Isn't it a little bit different? Because now we're looking at retaliation for seeking assistance from the ESGR. So wouldn't you have to be looking at different... wouldn't it be a different fact that you would be relying on here to show discrimination? Because it would be later in time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would point to the explicit finding, factual finding of the board that his absences for reserve duty were considered not only for the cancellation, but their continued decision not to pursue the upgrade upon his return. The Merit Systems Protection Board...
But again, isn't that different than actually retaliating against him for seeking help with respect to that issue?
Your Honor, the facts found regarding by the MSPB as part of its discrimination analysis regarding the conduct of the Air Force and his supervisors in the meetings that occurred immediately following, the day after, he had applied with the EGSR to enforce his rights under the USERRA would suggest the opposite. The fact that those facts, specifically the notes of the agency which corroborated Mr. Hayden's claims that they had considered his motivation and cited his absences during that meeting, the day after meeting with the EGSR, and for the first time raised concerns that were totally out of character regarding his performance, is in fact evidence of retaliation.
Mr. Smith, you're well into your rebuttal time. You can continue or save it.
No, thanks. I'd like to save it. Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Gerber.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The MSPB applied the correct legal standards, and substantial evidence supports their decision to dismiss all three claims. With respect to the discrimination claim, the MSPB found that the Air Force would not have promoted Mr. Hayden into a GS-12 position, regardless of his absence, regardless of any discriminatory animus, which
right, but the only thing that they relied on with respect to the discrimination claim was the need for the desk audit, right?
No, Your Honor. Respectfully, they also, well, there's two time periods to look at. First, prior from March 2012 to July 2012, there was the fact that even if there had been the upgrade had been processed in that time, they had decided to go forward with reclassifying the position, then there would have to be competition and there were these surplus employees. And the board does, in fact, cite to that information in its section about discrimination, and that's on page JA.
But what was the government's burden with respect to that, just to show that there would have to have been competition or that he would not have survived?
The government's burden is to show by a preponderance of the evidence that Mr. Hayden would not have received this. And because there was this mandatory priority placement, there was a surplus GS-12 employee who had priority over Mr. Hayden in any competition, that was sufficient to establish.
Did that employee ever get a promotion to a 12?
She did receive a GS-12 position in 2014 after this opinion, after the board's decision.
You mentioned March 2012. That's when you're saying that competition arose?
No, March 2012 is when the upgrade request gets submitted.
Okay. Can you give us a timeline of when the competition arose?
Absolutely. In late 2011, excuse me, I have a timeline here. Yes, in November 2011 is when B Flight lost its two GS-12 positions, and those employees became surplus. One of those was surplus throughout the entire period of this appeal.
I don't see a finding by the board that that other than the fact of competition that's referenced, I don't see a finding by the board saying that the government established that employee, the other employee, necessarily would have been chosen over Mr. Hayden.
The board does not state it as forcefully as perhaps the Air Force would have liked, but the board does state that there, even if the upgraded position were filled competitively, this is on page JA11, the GS-12 employees would have had internal priority over the appellant. That is sufficient.
My problem with the desk audit is that I don't understand how you get around Erickson. I mean, this is dead on with Erickson. The only reason he can't be there for an in-person desk audit is because he's on military leave. And we said in Erickson that you can't, even if you would hold absence against any other employee, you can't hold it against a military employee.
So this is actually segues to that second time period. So at the time, the Air Force determined, we are going to do this desk audit when you return. On page JA323, there's a line that says that we will perform the desk audit when he returns. And then, as the MSPB cited on JA324, there's an email from his supervisor saying, we'll reengage when you return. So at that time, there was an attempt to process him, to process this through the desk audit when he returned. Right. But in July 2012, the A flight where Mr. Hayden worked lost its additional protocol duties.
I get that, but I don't understand why in March 2012 that they had the right to discretionarily hold it. In other words, to not conduct the desk audit in the way that could have been done with a supervisor, or to do it by phone, or to conclude that in this particular instance a desk audit was not necessary given the recommendations of his supervisor. In other words, that decision in and of itself, to me, seems dead on with what we said in Erickson. I mean, we said in Erickson repeatedly, you cannot treat military employees the same way that you treat non-military employees. So the mere fact that she preferred, usually, to do this in person doesn't mean that she had the right to impose that preference on a military employee.
So, Your Honor, our position is that Erickson is about discriminating for the fact of the leave. So just because you could discriminate against someone for leave that's not military, you can't discriminate it when it is military leave. Here, there are downstream effects of that military leave, saying we're going to conduct this audit later when you're available. It's our position that is not discrimination. But even if this court disagrees with that, the board's decision still does say there was discriminatory animus. In its discussion of discriminatory animus, lists that there was not a good explanation for why the desk audit was not completed when he returned, that there was discriminatory animus. But the board found, and substantial evidence supports its finding, that even if the desk audit had gone through, he still would not have received the GS-12 position because of the surplus employees, or they might have decided not to create the GS-12 position. And certainly after July 2012, there was no longer any need for a GS-12 position. And the board found that the Air Force had sufficiently established that those valid reasons were sufficient to overcome its burden of proof. Turning to the reemployment, actually, before I do that, I wanted to clarify just one thing. Mr. Hayden argues that he should not have had to have competition and that Rule 19 would have applied. This is in AFMAN, the Air Force Manual 36-203, Table 2.1, which the parties have discussed at length in their briefs. Rule 19 is about if there is an error in the classification, in the job description as written, it's incorrectly classified. And there's no evidence that anyone has argued that that was what happened, that when Mr. Hayden received the GS-11 position in 2010, it should have actually been a GS-12.
What are we to make of the fact that he's gotten the 12 job now?
Yes, Your Honor. That is another thing I wanted to clarify. He received a GS-12 position not through a position upgrade, but because someone in B-Flight left. He competed for that job. There was competition, and he received it. And the reason, again, that he was able to receive it was the surplus GS-12 employees had already gotten other GS-12 positions prior to his competition. So
the thing that's troubling me in the record is that the reference to competition, still, I understand that someone has a priority, but they still have to be similarly situated in all other respects.
Yes.
So the fact that, I mean, again, the board never makes a finding that this other employee necessarily would have been chosen.
So Janera Hayden, and there is evidence in the record, was GS-12 protocol specialist, the same type of role that Mr. Hayden had, and had herself very good employment history and had excellent performance reports, and that's in the record at JA-260 and the pages just thereafter. So you are correct that the board never specifically states that this person would have received this job. The board instead, and this is a little more clear in the reemployment discussion, says, well, we're not sure if they even would have eventually decided to have a GS-12 position. Maybe it wouldn't have been processed by
July
2012.
Right, but the burdens are completely different.
The burdens are different, but the board's decision shows that the board determined that the Air Force, by a preponderance of the evidence, had showed that Mr. Hayden would not have gotten this job, that there were other employees with priority over him. There was another GS-11 employee. There was also an issue of whether it would have even gone through at all. And all of that
together...
But
that issue wasn't as of March.
Not as of March, but
right.
as of
July 2012. So whether it gone through at all was later.
Right, but if the position, and Your Honor previously was asking counsel, and it is a lack in the record. There is no evidence on the record that I'm aware of that discusses how long these upgrades usually take. But the board does say that it's unclear whether it would have processed it even if it had gone forward.
Right, but unclear whether it would have been processed doesn't help the Air Force when the Air Force has the burden in the discrimination claim?
Not if the Air Force had to establish that this particular way is how he would have not gotten the job. The point is that whether they decided not to upgrade the position, whether it didn't get upgraded before July 2012 and circumstances change, or whether there was this need for competition and there was another protocol specialist who had mandatory placement priority over him, all of those together, the board determined that is sufficient to establish by a preponderance of the evidence that he would not have gotten this position. And that is substantial evidence to support that finding.
Sounds like speculative evidence. I mean, I think the government's burden would be to establish that he would not have gotten it. Not to say, well, there's a lot of factors and we can't tell. It's your burden. It's not his burden.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I don't believe it's speculative. It's saying any of these paths leads to Mr. Hayden not getting
right,
the
but answer. That assumes that we're not talking about March 2012.
No, Your Honor, it does assume that we're talking about March through July 2012. Because again, even if they had determined to do away with the desk audit or do the desk audit with the supervisor, there would have had to be a competition that's described by Rules 20 and 21, and there were employees who had priority over him who had excellent histories and were protocol specialists. There's no reason to believe.
Not multiple employees, just one, right?
At the beginning, there were two, and then I apologize, John, I'm not sure exactly when the second one got the job. It was at some point during this period, there was only one.
As of March 2012, which is, I think, the time frame we should be looking at, since that's the time before he left. You're saying there were two. I thought you had said there was one.
There was one the entire period from March 2012 to after 2013. There was one. I confess I'm not sure exactly when the second one stopped being a surplus employee and got another GS-12 position. I believe it was after March 2012, but I confess I do not have a citation for you. So at least one at any given time. And the finding by the MSPB talks about two GS-12 employees and says the GS-12 employees from the B flight, and that's on JA-11. So it's talking about both of them there. So whether there's one or two doesn't really matter because there would be someone with priority to get this position, a protocol specialist with GS-12, to get a GS-12 protocol specialist position before Mr. Hayden would be able to get it. Turning quickly then to the reemployment claim, we've talked largely about what would be considered the reasonably certain. We've discussed that it's very similar to the discrimination except for a different burden of proof. But I wanted to briefly touch on whether the promotion is a generally granted advantage to all employees. The board found that there was no evidence that this type of promotion, creating a new position, would be generally granted to all employees. And this isn't like a career ladder promotion where you have a job that says eventually you can get to GS-12. This was having to create a new position.
Isn't the opportunity available, though?
Not if there's no need for it. It is discretionary, but it is not discretionary and generally granted to all employees. It is specifically created in very specific circumstances.
It's 90 out of 100 get it, right?
There is evidence on the record that that Ms. Chambers testified, Mr. Hayden's supervisor, that when she recommended things, they generally went through. However, there isn't evidence that there's normally, what would happen when there's a surplus employee and things change in the midst of the process. There's very little evidence about whether that is a usual circumstance and what would happen usually in that circumstance. And again, that just gets you further and further away from the generally granted to all employees situation. And if you said that this something that requires competition is a generally granted promotion to all employees. That gets you to this very strange situation that Mr. Hayden is suggesting, that you have to just look at the person's work history and then say, oh, well, they have good past records, and then it's reasonably certain they would get this promotion, even if it had to be competed. I see my time is out. I would like to just very briefly touch on retaliation with Your Honors.
Very briefly.
Very briefly, yes, Your Honor. Just want to mention that it is important to look only post-2013 for evidence of discrimination based on the seeking the USERRA rights. And the board determined that because of the change in circumstance, there was evidence that they wouldn't have created this GS-12 position in 2013 and later. We respectfully request that the court affirm the MSPB's decision.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Gruber. Mr. Smith has a couple of minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
First, to address the time frame at which a promotion takes to be processed, I would submit that Mr. Hayden's recent promotion took 4 to 6 weeks from the time it was initially submitted to be processed. I would also like to point out the fact that there are a lack of fact findings with regards to whether Mr. Hayden would have received a promotion is not a coincidence. It's because the MSPB failed to apply the correct legal standard. They required Mr. Hayden to show that he was entitled to the promotion rather than asking the Air Force to prove that he would not have received that promotion. Therefore, many of the facts that Your Honors have pointed out are lacking in the record is more than just a mere coincidence.
So it's your position that even though the board used the language and said that it understood what the burden of proof was and explained what the standards were and then seems to have used the language suggesting that there's a burden of proof, that nonetheless, when they actually applied it, Mr. Hayden really had the burden of proof.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's precisely the situation in Bekwar. The MSPB reversed the initial determination. It was affirmed by this court because although they recited the proper standard and informed the party regarding the proper standards, they imposed an additional requirement to show that the veteran showed he was entitled to the position, and that was reversed. Further, to the extent that your opposing counsel addresses Rule 19 today, that was not addressed in their briefs, although it was included as a relevant portion of Table 2.1. I would argue that any such arguments be waived. And
But we can read the rule.
The rule itself
does talk about the fact that there was an improper classification.
It's actually directed to the fact that there is no increase in duties, and Mr. Hayden was already performing GS-12 duties as detailed in the position upgrade request. So therefore, I would argue that Rule 19 is the applicable rule. Also, Rule 20 also provides for non-competitive promotions in the event that there are not similarly situated personnel. There was no such factual finding made by the Air Force, by the MSPB in this case. Finally, with regards to the generally granted benefit, there is record evidence, I believe, that was cited by Your Honors, that only 10 out of hundreds of position upgrade requests had been rejected, 10 of hundreds, so we're talking above 95%. That seems reasonably certain, and I thank you, and my client thanks you for your time.
Oh. Do you have any thoughts on the government's argument about Mr. Hayden having to compete and that there were two GS-12 eligible employees who he had to compete with?
One of the GS-12 employees had been employed in a GS-12 position, so there is one. To the extent that that person had mandatory placement priority and should be considered, though they shouldn't under the proper rule, to the extent you credit that argument of the government, there still should have been a competition that takes place. There is no showing that Mr. Hayden would not have been considered for this position despite there being someone in surplus. Further, Mr. Hayden, as detailed in my previous argument, had an exemplary record and would have, and also, at the time the position upgrade request was submitted, that was of the supervisor, presumably, who was evaluating all of the GS-12 personnel, and she chose Mr. Hayden because he was already performing GS-12 duties. I think that her judgment, she was in the absolute best position to make that recommendation, and she did so.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.